నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ రీడింగ్ ఫ్రమ్ చాప్టర్ 18 ఫస్ట్ కాంటో Title of the chapter is Prikshit, Cursed by a Brahmin Boy. Which then leads into the final chapter of Shukadeva Goswami enters and the scene for speaking Srimad Bhagavatam is then set. So, we discussed last time the first four verses of the chapter. Including a little prelude to the next chapter, that is that one of the glories of Maharaj Prikshit is that he surrendered himself as a disciple of Shukadeva Goswami, son of Vyasadeva. And thus he was able to understand the actual position of the personality of Godhead. But we should understand that that's not ordinary to have that capacity. Or by piety, by speculative powers, by wealth, by material things, and assemble them in different ways and make a big pile of them, and it's still not possible. It's a spiritual event, spiritual manifestation. And the surrendering unto Shukadeva Goswami was the event that made that possible. Along with the fact that he was already great devotee of the Lord. But even that was consummated by this contact with Shukadeva Goswami. And then the final verse of the section that we read, this was so because those who, such as Maharaj Prikshit, and anyone else who, have dedicated their lives to the transcendental topics of the personality of Godhead, of whom the Vedic hymns sing, and who are constantly engaged in remembering the lotus feet of the Lord, do not run the risk of having misconceptions even at the last moment of their lives. So there's a connection between conceptions and realization. And there's a connection between misconceptions and repeated birth and death. Even for good souls, even for sincere souls, even for learned souls, misconceptions are not possible in the lives of those that are directly receiving special and transcendental mercy from the Supreme Lord. And there's eligibility for receiving that special spiritual descending mercy from the Supreme Lord. There's two criteria mentioned in the verse. Dedicated their lives to the transcendental topics of the Supreme Lord personality of Godhead, and who are constantly engaged in remembering him. Now, constantly engaged in remembering him does not mean a state of neutrality of doing nothing. It means is in the life of Maharaj Parikshit. He was, and the life of the Pandavas, and the life of all the Vaishnavas we find within Srimad Bhagavatam, the perfected souls, from renunciates to grihasthas, from kings to sannyasis, learned persons to ordinary persons. They all had duties. This is the frame of Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, that performing prescribed duties and always think of me. And then there's Swadharma, there's prescribed duties according to one's contact with the modes of nature. And then there's duties corresponding. But then there's this, so that's the frame, active life. Prabhupada writes that the Pandavas were simultaneously very valorous and at the same time completely dependent, which are, you might think of them as, they don't go together. How can you, feeling dependent, completely dependent, it's like an infant or a paraplegic or somebody who's hospitalized. They can't do anything for themselves. They're completely inept or completely undeveloped or totally helpless. Feeling fully dependent doesn't require being inept and being immobilized. Feeling as an example of our great souls, vigorous, enthusiastic, doing so many things. And doing them in full Krishna consciousness. With the sense of whatever it is that's enabling me to do these things, it's Krishna. And if Krishna wants me to do this, I'll do this. Krishna wants me to do that, I'll do that. Krishna will give me the resources to do this or to do that. And that way, a Vaishnava is above the Varnashram system. The Varnashram system is, you have your quality and you have your assigned work according to your quality, and you don't do another's work. Krishna indicates, even if you can do it nicely, you don't do another's work. That's faulty. Which is the mandate for those who are not in Daivi Varnashram, but are looking for material elevation through Varnashram. But the Vaishnava principle is, if it's for Krishna, you do it. When you visit Mayapur, sometimes you may have the opportunity to visit Mayapur. And behind the asasana of Srila Prabhupada, there's portraits of our disciplic succession. Very nice paintings. Oh, there's one painting of Srila Prabhupada. There's a classic painting. It shows Prabhupada walking with his cane. In the background is the Mayapur temple, when there was nothing but agricultural fields in the Mayapur temple. And you notice off to the right, there's somebody plowing the field, being pulled by an oxen. That somebody was Jayapataka Swami. And because Prabhupada had said, you teach by example. You're the, director, co-director of Mayapur. Besides the GBC, you're the co-director of this project, and to be the co-director of this project, you teach by example, you take the plow. You show people, this is how you do it. Now, by doing that, does that make the sannyasi a Vaishya? A Vaishnava. He's doing because it sets an example. Or another manifestation of, or illustration of this is, there's a very nice picture of Prabhupada holding the hand of Dwarkadish Das, a young Gurukul boy, and he's showing him how to make the Sanskrit letters, American boy. So he's making the Sanskrit letters in the schoolroom. Is he the student? He's teaching by his example. He's the Acharya teaching by his example. That's Vaishnava. So at the end of letters, Prabhupada would sometimes conclude, like give a little analysis of a situation and say, please do the needful. Now there's unregulated people, there's regulated people, and there's transcendental people. The unregulated people, if it feels good, do it. Or just do it. And then there's regulated people. You don't do or not do anything unless it's enjoined in the scriptures. And then there's transcendental people. They know what the injunctions of the scriptures are, and they stay within them generally, but if something is needed, they'll give the dust from their feet for Krishna's headache. Or they'll do whatever they have to do if it's for service to Krishna. Bhagavatam is teaching us this transcendental principle, and that's the principle. When one is taking exclusive shelter in Krishna, not for purpose of elevation, or I'll get this, or I'll get that, not a mercantile mentality. I'll do this, and I'll get that mentality. Just there's indication Krishna desires this. I'm getting verification from Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, so I do it. No hesitation. I fully depend upon Krishna. And if it means there's some austerity, no problem. Some obstacle, no problem. Some feature of duality, no problem. Because there's only one thing that is driving me, and that is Krishna desires this, that's very clear. And it's confirmed. Not just a subjective thing, it's confirmed. Therefore, whatever. That criterion invokes the mercy of Krishna, whereby then Krishna discloses the truth about his true identity, which is a supremely loving personality. Krishna reciprocates in such a way that the individual recognizes Krishna is a truly unlimitedly loving personality. And just a little side note, we're all looking for that. Without exception. We're all, without exception, looking for a situation where we can express our love and experience reciprocation of love. There's no exception. Even outside of the human species of life. There's no exception. Any other place where we pose that tendency is insufficient. Not satisfying. And when we repose that tendency upon Krishna, we can endure anything, accept anything, do anything, be anything. Certainly abide by theistic conduct. And if it's called for, with clear indication, Guru Sadhu Shastra indication, we can do whatever is required. Plow a field, learn Sanskrit, like Arjuna did, teach dancing lessons as a eunuch. We can do whatever Krishna wants. We're not likely to do that one, but whatever Krishna wants is the point. Whatever Krishna wants. That's the qualification for understanding Krishna. unrestricted surrender, guided by Shukadeva Goswami or some representative, where from our side that submission is there. There's regular hearing, just as it's indicated here. Not just regular hearing. Shrinpatasvakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana. But here it's dedicated their lives to transcendental topics of the Supreme Lord and always engaged in remembering Him. That person is eligible. Maharaj Pariksit had the eligibility. So then, just to emphasize, I'm saying all this to emphasize one sentence from the purport, where Prabhupada writes, by scientific adaption, one is able to remember the Lord even at the end of life when the power of remembrance is slackened due to derangement of bodily membranes. So there's a natural order of things. That's when your body works right, you function okay. And when your body doesn't work right, you're distracted. I got a pain. I got a, you know, I can't. So many things. Can't remember like I used to be able to remember. Right, Dr. Sarin? The memory goes when you get older. It's just one of those things. I mean, it's just, you can't remember somebody's name or you can't remember, you know, just some simple practical thing. Like the absent-minded professor, only the absent-mindedness of... Anyway, so the time energy deteriorates things. And when the time of death comes, things that make our systems work shut down. In transit to India, there was a stopover in Frankfurt. We had a holdover for 4.5 hours because there was a little gizmo up in the cockpit that didn't work. So I had to take drag the plane and shut the whole system down, everybody off the plane and hang out for a while. Dragged the plane over to the hangar, pulled out a gizmo, put in another gizmo, and presto, it worked. But the time of death, it's not like that. Put in a gizmo in place for a gizmo. I mean, they're trying to do that through surgery and so on, but it's not the same. At a certain point, the machine doesn't work, and the passenger has to get out, and it's not going to fly because you can't put another gizmo in. That's it. That's the design of this machine, this body. So, what Prabhupada is writing here is, by scientific adaptation, that's referring to the previous sentence, where he says, a submissive disciple is able to live transcendentally and continue to the end of life. That is, there's instructions, applying, small thing. Application of instructions. This is scientific adaptation. There's a spiritual science. And you learn the spiritual science from Shukadeva Goswami or some representative of Shukadeva Goswami with dedication to those topics. And you hear those topics and you apply those topics by scientific adaptation. And then there's a whole other set of rules called Krishna consciousness, or the spiritual energy, internal potency of the Lord. It makes this machine at the time of death no longer necessary for remembrance. Because the animating factor of the machine is the soul, whether it's an airplane or a body or whatever it is. Without touch of spirit, it just doesn't work. And you may or may not be able to replace broken parts, but without the touch of spirit, no machine works. Fundamental. Life comes from life principle. And when that life connects with the Supreme Life through this descending process, with dedication, through transparent medium, receiving it, living by it, applying it, remembering the source of this transcendental science, then even at the time of death, the machine breaks down, doesn't matter. Even for not transcendentalists, it appears that something like this goes on. I don't want to get too far afield, but the whole out-of-body experience, they even have an acronym for it, OBEs, where the person is under anesthesia, so their neural system is shut down, and they have cardiac arrest, which means the oxygen system is shut down. And so physiologically, the membranes are not working. But there are many examples of the soul and subtle body carrying the soul above the whole operating table or floating around somewhere and observing the whole thing. Conscious awareness is not here, it's in the soul. Even, you know, from disbelieving scientists, the seat of awareness is something other than the body. And the biochemical interaction, which is a fundamental conception. Anyway, so back to a transcendentalist doesn't need an out-of-body experience, but it needs the empowerment of Krishna to understand Krishna, the empowerment of Krishna to remember Krishna, even when the bodily membranes shut down. It's not likely to happen otherwise, without some special intervention. Oh, the statement is that Maharaj Pariksit had that eligibility. So, carrying on. Text number 5. As long as the great, powerful son of Abhimanyu remains the emperor of the world, there is no chance that the personality of Kali will flourish. So, this is being spoken, well, detail, but it's being spoken after Maharaj Pariksit is gone. But it's describing a principle that when there is such a personality as Maharaj Pariksit, just by their service, their presence means service. So by their presence, by their service, by their presence and their consequent service, such a person as a powerful king as Maharaj Pariksit, the influence of Kali cannot act. Now the next verse says that Kali entered just after Krishna's departure. In fact, it says, the very day and the very moment the personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, left this earth, the personality of Kali, who promotes all kinds of irreligious activities, came into the world. The previous verse, number 5, says he couldn't act. He was there. Not exactly sure of the chronology. When the reign of Maharaj Pariksit came corresponding with Krishna's departure from the world. It came after. His reign came after because Krishna had already departed and that information was passed to Maharaj Yudhisthira. So there was some gap of time. Krishna left, Kali entered. had some time passed. Maharaj Yudhisthira found out that Krishna had left. He left, turned over his kingdom to Maharaj Pariksit, who by that time was of age to rule the kingdom. Maharaj Pariksit became king, the emperor. Kali couldn't act. He tried. Previous chapters describe how he tried. Maharaj Pariksit checked him. The Prabhupada writes, "This is the way of good government. The disturbing elements like the personality of Kali will always try to extend their nefarious activities. But it is the duty of the able state to check them by all means." Now, how did he check him by all means? One way to check him by all means is eliminate him. But that isn't what he did. He was prepared to do that, but then the very tricky, cunning, clever personality of Kali surrendered so as to fell at Maharaj Pariksit's feet. Spare me, I surrender, I surrender. But surrender didn't mean I reform. I won't be the personality that I am. He didn't make such a promise. But you're the king, I've surrendered, I'm in your kingdom. Please give me a place to stay. So we know what he said, where there's sinful but there's no sinful activities. Alright, wherever there's hoarding of gold, because wherever there's hoarding of gold, there's sinful activities. You can stay in that place. So in effect, it's sending him to prison rather than death penalty. Because the first principle was death penalty for one doing what you're doing. Breaking the legs of a bull viciously. Death penalty. No hesitation. I surrender, I surrender. So the people that are engaged in that slaughter aren't surrendering to Maharaj Pariksit, because there's no Maharaj Pariksit saying, you stop this, and I'll take your life. But Kali, personality of Kali, was given that sentence, he surrendered, so instead of death, it was imprisonment. I'm making this point specifically. He didn't send to a place with bars and big thick walls and barbed wire all around and guards marching up and down and that kind of thing. But there's another kind of prison, the prison of material existence, where sinful activities and hoarding of gold takes place. Now, I've many times thought about this thing of hoarding gold. There's two specific examples, scriptural examples, where the keeping of some savings is mandated. Those two specific examples are that when Sanatana Goswami divided his wealth, half went to the Brahmins and Vaishnavas, one quarter went to his family, one quarter was for emergency. Rupa Goswami, excuse me. One quarter for emergency. Exemplary. So, holding something for emergency is different than hoarding. And then another example is a government, particularly Vedic times government, would be the land holder, and persons would do agriculture on the land and some portion went to the government. Of whatever was provided. What does the government need bunches of grains and things for? For emergency. For when there's some situation like the tsunami thing happens. They have right away. They have the supplies. For emergency. It's not for their comfort. Or, how many chapatis can they eat? It's not for their bellies, it's for emergency. It's part of the duty of government to extract taxes for emergency purpose. or emergency purpose. Or another example of this that Prabhupada spoke about. He told this from his grihastha days as a pharmacist, involved in the pharmaceutical business. There was one Muslim man who in his youth was very poor, but he somehow got into the business of manufacturing pharmaceutical bottles. In the course of time, he became very wealthy. So Prabhupada said, I asked the gentleman, what is your plan now that you have wealth? He said, I'm going to build a mosque. So to build a mosque, it takes some resource. You can't build a mosque and build a church and build a temple without some savings. So those are three examples that when there is some facility, it's used in the proper way, and hoarding is in another category. At least my understanding of this is hoarding means, like the Avanti Brahmin, for example, he had so much money from the 11th canto. This is Krishna's description to Uddhava. He had so much wealth, but he just accumulated it and didn't give it. Didn't even give it to his family. He didn't give it to anybody. He didn't use it for a good purpose. He just delighted in accumulating. And it was never the level where it's enough. It was always more. I know some people, but not from the Bhagavatam, but in real life, in real time. That's their thing. Whatever they have, they just put it away somewhere. They don't use it. They don't even live in you know, a materially opulent setting themselves. There's just some satisfaction they derive from accumulating wealth. So spending lavishly for one's sense gratification is also foolish. But accumulating it for no good purpose, just for the whatever it is, satisfaction of having it, that's where sinful activities will manifest, where Kali will come. Certainly where there's lavish spending, that likelihood is also there, but that's not a certainty. As we know from Pundarik Vidyanidhi, he was very, very wealthy. And it seemed like he was just a lavish sense gratifier, but his consciousness was not like that. And other examples. So, I just wanted to define that a little bit, that the hoarding, that where Kali was given the prison is where hoarding, where kripana mentality exists. You have some piety, from that piety there's some resource that naturally comes from that piety, janma, aishvarya, shruta, shri, bhir. And if that's just something that you just derive some prideful satisfaction in having it and trying to make it grow and make it grow and make it grow, for certain sinful activities will accompany that lifestyle. For certain. That's the place given for the personality of Kali to reside. That's his prison. We become co-prisoners in the same cell with the personality of Kali, if that's the mentality. And we can see, when people have that mentality, what their relationships are like, what their life pattern is like. They just quarrel and fight and, you know, push themselves around. They're the kind of people you try to stay away from. So the mentality is the type of mentality one should stay away from. Having for emergency and having for some purpose for the Lord's service, that's good. Prabhupada said that Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, when he traveled about in his Gaudiya Math if he found that one temple was flourishing, they had some resource, immediately he would give them some project to deplete their treasury, so they would then be in a dependent situation on this principle. Better to be safe than sorry. Better to be dependent upon Krishna to maintain, but to be in a situation where one has this, like the Shamataka jewel. Every day it provided 70 pounds of gold. 70 or 120. Anyway, some number of pounds of gold every day. It brought a lot of problems to a lot of people, just having that lying around. So, the fruit of one's past piety may be in the form of something that brings in something. Some recognition, some fame, some honor, some wealth, some something. Beware. The exclusive shelter of Krishna spirit may disappear. And then, down. So, Maharaj Parikshit was in the position of utilizing everything in Krishna's service. And in the presence of such a personality, Kali couldn't act that because he gave him a place to live, but he very strictly ensured, as the king, that Kali couldn't influence innocent people. He gave no chance for the citizens to be swayed by the personality of Kali. So that's the king. Then the next verse is Krishna. Again, the verse, the very day and moment when the personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, left this earth, the personality of Kali, who promotes all kinds of irreligious activities, came into this world. In the purport, Prabhupada speaks about what about now, in the age of Kali, where Krishna, his two lotus feet are no longer touching this earth. Queen Kunti was praying to Krishna. She was speaking to Krishna in a prayerful mood. By your presence here in Hastinapur, everything is bountiful. The trees are bearing fruits in all seasons. The rivers are flowing with sweet water. The supply of mineral, the supply of gems, the supply of all valuable things, the supply of sufficient rain. Everything is auspicious. And you're taking the lotus feet out of Hastinapur. What will happen? She actually intimates that the Yadus and the Pandavas will experience great tribulation after you've gone. Indicating that she knew, indirectly she's indicating, she knew that Krishna was not just going to leave Hastinapur, but he was going to leave the earth. He was going to the place where the Yadus were. But the Yadus and the Pandavas will be bereft of all this bounty. And not just, she wasn't interested in the material opulence, forget it. She was interested in Krishna. So when Krishna was present, personality of Kali couldn't even exist. After Krishna departed, the moment Krishna departed, the personality of Kali entered. And what about in this age of Kali? What to do? It's one of the six questions in the first chapter of the whole Srimad Bhagavatam. After Krishna leaves this world, where will religious principles be maintained and upheld? The answer is through the Srimad Bhagavatam. So that's what's in the purport. It's within the previous verse also. It's the qualification of Maharaj Parikshit to be he who checks during the age of Kali, the influence of Kali. It's his complete dedication to the topics of the personality of Godhead and constant remembrance of the Lord. Therefore, what is the antidote to the influence of Kali? What will give protection to us and to the world? That's what the sages wanted to know. In the first chapter, the recitation, regular hearing of the topics of Srimad Bhagavatam will protect us individually and collectively. And the constant chanting of the holy name, Prabhupada writes, sinful activity cannot enter. Now certainly there's the situation where there's intermittent chanting and intermittent submission and then slackening and then the Anishtita Bhakti platform that we're all too familiar with. Therefore we need to notch things up a little bit to the Nishta stage where there's steady execution of devotional service. Regular hearing, at least regular hearing, with great rapt attention. And then the ill effects of Kali. It's like Krishna's present. Prabhupada says it's so nice. Where is it? Something that Krishna becomes situated with compactly within the heart. Neat little, compact technology. Micro technology. Maybe nanotechnology. Can't see him even with a microscope. Krishna's there. Just from one who faithfully and regularly, ardently, enthusiastically takes to this process of hearing and chanting, valorously takes up services within this world and holds in their heart a very dependent, helpless position or disposition towards Krishna. That's high. But we need that high ground. Because Kali Yuga is rampant, moving fast. Technology is speeding it up really fast. Prabhupada writes, in modernized human society, there are great advancements of material science, and they have invented the radio to distribute sound in the air. But to speak of radio, there's so many other. So, instead of vibrating some nuisance sound for sense enjoyment, if the state arranges to distribute transcendental sound by resounding the holy name, fame, and activities of the Lord as they are authorized in Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, then a favorable condition will be created. Now this is oversimplistic, right? Not practical. It's just, pie in the sky and, this silly old man. Some offensive statements and thoughts like that. Very well, he's old and he likes his things. Besides it's wrong, it's offensive. It's not so. At any age or at any stage of degradation, just like Prabhupada made a recommendation for New York City. He got reports and even experienced, we had this at one time, huge Harinam Sankirtan. We had a 12-story building, and in that 12-story building there were 250 devotees living in the building, and every Saturday night we went on Harinam. All 250, plus the congregation. Saturday night, New York City. Woohoo! in the theater district. It was powerful. And people really liked it. We would, as we would, you know, they would dance, and they would sing, and they would raise their arms with us. And, you know, some people were put off, but it was so joyful, so powerful, so uplifting. So Prabhupada smiled and smiled, and he said, you should open one hall, call it Gauranga Hall, and just do two things. Every morning, before people go to work, hold massive Sankirtan for a long time. At the end, serve prasadam, then send people off. Not even katha, not even, you know, Bhagavad Gita class. Just kirtan, prasadam, and off they go. And you will transform the city. These people, they like the holy name. They like the holy name. Krishna is all attractive. He never did that. But that was a statement, a very clear directive that Prabhupada gave. And if numbers of people in New York City become Krishna conscious, that will help the rest of the world become attracted and inclined towards Krishna consciousness. But what was the formula? The holy name. When he came, the first time I met Srila Prabhupada was at the university that I attended, and Prabhupada did the same thing. He just chanted for 2 hours, spoke for 10 minutes, and had them serve prasadam. That was his. The circumstances that evening were such that had he spoken any longer than that, the audience was not in any condition to hear anything. They were 100% intoxicated. So that's the age of Kali, and there's a compassionate way of extending transcendental shelter into such an audience, or to provide an audience that benefit, and for an educated audience such as yourselves to hear it very carefully, contemplate and evaluate the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. This is an added facility that you have. When this is done, Prabhupada writes, then a favorable condition will be created. The principles of religion in the world will be reestablished, and thus the executive heads, who are so anxious to drive away corruption from the world, will be successful. Nothing is bad if properly used for the service of the Lord. Yukta Vairagya principle being spoken of here, radio or whatever it is, technology. If not used in the Lord's service, it has one kind of an effect, and if used in the Lord's service, it has another kind of effect. So, it's the consciousness behind the technology, it's not the technology. So, what's happened, those of you that are availing yourself to this spiritual adaptation, scientific spiritual adaptation, you're very fortunate, and you're very responsible to place proper consciousness behind developing your skills of technology. And I just sent out some little notice to a number of people, something that did a little research, and Prabhupada said it's not that we that it was like 10 quotes, all essentially saying the same thing, spanning over a period of some number of years. As Prabhupada was saying in various ways, it's not that there's some expectation that the whole world is going to take to these principles. But even if a small percentage, even if 1%, can understand and apply these principles, the planet will be a different place. That's not a difficult, inconceivable objective, 1%. It's a lot of people. And the standard is, very high standard. Sense control, free from egoism and greed and lust and all those things, religious principles, and very seriously engage in hearing, chanting. But if Prabhupada's appeal here and in many other places is the government should help. When he met with the lieutenant of the Chicago police force, he said, we have limited resources. We're doing what we can. You see the result with our students. The government should help. If the government would help us to create this opportunity for kirtan and hearing this message, we could do a lot more. But you're standing behind secular state rhetoric, and so you're not helping, and so we're doing what we can. And you like the results. Really, you should help. Separation of church and state. So you're spending so much money with so much problems with crime and corruption. And India is no exception. India's way up there with crime and corruption. Certainly in corruption. What to do? So Swamiji comes along and says, hear Srimad Bhagavatam and chant Hare Krishna. Out of the way. Who else has something practical to say? They're looking for a material solution to a material problem and they're just creating more material complexity. It doesn't mean that we need not use practical brains, but the practical brain must be driven by a spiritual brain. And anything, as Prabhupada's final statement, nothing is bad if properly used for the service of the Lord. These are very, very, like, core principles of life. And at least, minimally, we should be very clear about them for ourselves and our own lives and how we lead our lives. After some time, you're going to be off in the world somewhere and making all kinds of decisions about, will I eat this? Will I do that? Will I see this? Will I go there? Or not? And if I have things, how will I use those things? I'm giving some indication here. This is the training of consciousness so that those wise decisions of applying things that are naturally going to come to you because of your education and your sacrifices and so forth and so on, they'll come. What's going to be the consciousness behind? So you can make a difference in your own life and you can make a difference in the world if these principles are understood. It's sobering, isn't it? It's like you don't have to make those decisions right now. You're just, you know, you're on the conveyor belt of the academia. You know, some decisions. How you deal with family and how you deal with friends and this and that, some social things. But the set of decisions of how you're going to implement what Krishna puts in front of you, it will increase. And the consciousness behind, it's not just morality, it's Krishna consciousness. The Bhagavatam certainly teaches, and Bhagavad Gita certainly teaches morality, but it doesn't begin and end there. That's a mistake. Not the Bhagavatam's message. It's not the purpose of life. Yes, no denying, we should be ethical and moral, and more so, far more so than at present. What's going to sustain that consciousness in the present world environment? Good luck. There must be a spiritual, just like there must be a soul within the body to animate the body, there must be spiritual consciousness to sustain and animate theistic conduct. Otherwise, the erosion factor is so powerful. Today's immorality is tomorrow's standard. That's what's going on. has to be spiritual consciousness, sustaining and supporting it. Real, the real thing, with something genuine. So, Mars, the good government isn't there either. Mars Pritchard isn't around. But there is the hearing and chanting. Kalir Doshan Nidhi Rajan Yasti Eko Mahankanat Kirtanadeva Krishna Shyamukta Sangam Paramajit. That ocean of bad qualities, Kali Yuga, but there's one good thing. Get on the boat. Hearing and chanting. And applying that message very carefully. So I had intended to cover much more, but I got a little carried away. So looking at the clock, I think I'll end and see if you have some discussion, questions. I hope I haven't intimidated you with these ominous tones. But that's what the topic is. It's the person, it's the age of Kali. And by the influence of the personality of Kali, even Maharaj Pariksit gets cursed.
Supplying these principles, one faces the challenges from Kali.
Yes.
So
it goes with the territory.
In that situation, people who are just beginning Krishna consciousness, they get...
That also goes with the territory.
But how do they... What is the factor that helps them?
Adau Shraddha, it's at least some preliminary faith. And good association. When Lord Chaitanya discusses this with Sanatan Goswami, he uses the example of a small plant. This is very common here in India. The horticulturists, when they put in a tree, they put a fence around the tree. Now it's not the fence around the tree stops anything and everything, but it does something. And you can put wire mesh to keep the rodents and other things that will just come, and that's their food. But once it grows big tree, it doesn't need a little fence. But in the young stage, it needs a little fence. And same for some persons who are beginning in their Krishna consciousness practices, and the influences of Kali are here and there. Ideal is to create a situation where there's a little incubation, a little protection from the onslaughts of predators. And that may be one of Kali's things of saying, aha, you're whatever. You're exclusivists. You don't mix with everybody. Or whatever. It's another thing for Kali to quarrel about and create dissension. Still, a horticulturist will put a little fence around a little seedling that's growing. Put it in a high place where it's growing before you plant it, so you can't be. So that's what, using that metaphor, which probably came, we responsibly should try to do like that. It's like, I'll give a different example than what you're describing. Within our temples, when new people join our temples, we have a policy that there's a bhakta leader, and if somebody else in the temple sees the bhakta doing something foolish, they don't instruct the bhakta. They speak to the bhakta leader, and in the right time, circumstance, and ambience, Bhakti leader will explain, this is something that needs some correction, let me explain it to you. And so the right relationship is there, and so the learning process goes on. Because if that little fence is not there, then the bhakti gets instruction from everybody in the temple. And, you know, sometimes there's even different and conflicting instructions. But even if it was the same instruction, it's overwhelming. Everybody's their instructor. It's a problem. So, that system of a little protection. That's ideal. And in this world, we don't have ideal circumstances so often. So, therefore, when we don't have ideal circumstances, it's like it's winter. If you try during the winter to start a tulsi sprout, better to wait till the season changes. But you may need tulsi in you. Here's someone. So, what do you do?
Is it that the 1% that is practicing very sincerely, they help the weaker people?
Yes.
By
their presence. By their example, by their precept, and by their spiritual presence. Now that means that 1%, they're going to get dumped on by a certain sector of the 99%. And the 1% says, in service to Krishna, that's okay. It's not like, you know, that, hey, what's going on? I'm just sacrificing myself for you and you're dumping on me. I mean, it's in the verses coming up. It's something that one who takes the position of devotional service, or just being in the age of Kali, there's a certain set of givens. It's the age of Kali. It's the winter time and it's cold. The plants and the insects and the birds and the dogs and the people, you know, they can say I don't like it, but it's winter time. There's not enough food for the birds, and there's not enough, you know. It's winter. It's the age of Kali. And due to our misdeeds, here we are, right in the middle of the age of Kali. So, whatever my misdeeds are that brought me to being in this circumstance, I accept. But my mind will not budge an inch from the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. That's what's important to me. Easy to say, huh? It's another thing to apply. Anything else? 7:30. Does anybody hear a 7:30 bell ringing? Class. Those of you that have to go to class and, you know, carry on to the next part of your activity, please do so. And anyone else that has some topic you'd like to bring up or have discussed, please do so. Yes. How do we make sure? Well, we'll start with this point. We can assume, until we're pure devotees, that there's a mix. Safe assumption. And so there's what we do, and then there's the consciousness behind what we do. Let's say I may be entrusted with the service of offering arti. And a person who's entrusted with that service may think, here I am, I have this special privilege. I'm being recognized for my good qualities. It's feeding false ego instead of purifying consciousness. It's the right activity, but it's not done in the right consciousness. There's likely to be a mix. So one should... There's three principles that one can apply for. There's at least three. One is philosophically understand what our position is. The three categories are philosophy, association, and cultivation. Or your note takers. Understand the principle. I wouldn't be here in this material world if there was not enjoy apart from Krishna interests. I wouldn't have this body. I wouldn't have this tricky material mind. I wouldn't be here. I'd be with Krishna in the spiritual world. And so there's recognition. And then some repentance or regret. And with that means I make a commitment, I want to move from that position to the for Krishna only position. That's just, so far it's just philosophical. Just analyzing my situation. And then association. Let me associate with those who have more than I do the position of unmixed motivations. Let me try to make those relationships very nice, like give extra attention to those relationships. Let them be in the right mood, in the right manner, and consistently. Doesn't mean I avoid others, but that takes on special importance, good association. And Lord Chaitanya teaches that one should carefully guard against unwholesome association, at least confidential dealings with unwholesome people. People who are too much attached to women and so forth, too much attached to sense gratification. That's unwholesome association. So I may be in the classroom or in circumstances of life where that goes on. I'm not going to intimately associate with those people. And cultivation. Let me lean the other direction. You know, if there's a pan scale, you put something on the other scale. You try extra to exercise the sincerity motivation muscle. Just continue to cultivate like that. And when you see the other, because the other, if you're attentive, you'll see it. Just like when you're trying to be attentive while chanting, that's when you find how much the mind wanders. If you're not trying to be attentive while chanting, the mind is also wandering. Or when you become a devotee, you realize how many impurities there are. Before you become a devotee, the place is infested with impurities that you don't even notice. So when you're trying for that cultivation of greater sincerity, the other things will make their, you'll recognize, oh, because they're already there. Just turn on the light, you see the dirt. Shut the light out, you don't see the dirt. Turn on the light. Clean. Cultivate. That's what I'm saying now is Rupa Goswami's teaching. Anukoyena Krishna Anushilana. In Sanskrit, that's what I just said in English. Anukul, you accept. Krishna.
What way?
Anukul yena Krishna anushilana. Those things that are pleasing to Krishna, following the path of those who are of that quality. That's association. Cultivate with the right inspiration and example before you. And just continue to cultivate. And continue to cultivate. And continue. Like cultivating a garden. Same word is used, cultivate a garden. You plant something that you want, and you have to come along and pull out the weeds. You water, and when you water, the weeds come out. You just keep pulling the weeds. Eventually, the seeds that produce those weeds, they're depleted. But you have to keep pulling the weeds. So, yesham tvantakatam papam, desist from sinful activity. Jananam punya karmanam, engage in proper activity. Theistic conduct, mold your life in that way. Whatever the seeds are there from previous, that's alright, just don't put any more seeds in. Keep pulling out the weeds as they fructify. However long it takes, doesn't matter. It's my project. I'm growing the creeper of bhakti instead of the garden of weeds. Tedvanva moha nirmukta. Then one can be above this influence of duality, that is, attraction and repulsion. I like, I don't like. This attracts my senses. So I just do it because you just do it. So I'm not going to just do it. I'm going to be above that duality. I'm going to only do if it's pleasing to Krishna. I'm not going to do if it's not pleasing to Krishna. And you exercise that muscle by cultivation. Vajante mam vridha vrata. Then the firm determination comes. So we're not at that firm determination stage because we're at this mixed stage. We have to cultivate. Lazy people won't advance. Sorry. Some advance. Just sit and passively listen. But those that make significant advancement are those that significantly apply themselves. I've been saying this in the course of my travel, but it's one of my observations. Those people, because I visit places, you know, again and again, it's in a kind of rotation. I see that people that make advancement are those that apply what they've understood. And those that don't make significant advancement, they don't apply. They can give the answers. Press the button, they give the answers. But it just remains in the mind. Mental acceptance of Krishna consciousness without application. We don't advance. And how long can we do that with our wheels spinning in the mud, not going anywhere? Applying the gas pedal, but we're just spinning in the mud. Need a little traction. Application. That requires submission. About submission. I want to figure it out. Okay. Figure it out. When you figure it out, you realize I can't, I figured out that I can't make advancement just by figuring it out. I have to apply. I have to submit. To get that extra step of application. It requires submission. Krishna system. I can't beat Krishna system. However clever. Krishna's got his system. So. Anything else? Yes.
Did he get Ajahn Puri from his treasure? Did he get any indication and guarantee that he will become his Ajahn Puri and the devotee and help others? It is one of the steps that I have to take.
What was the first step? Say it again.
If I dedicate fully my life to Krishna Prasadam, is there any indication or guarantee
Okay, I got the rest of it. So, for the sake of the recording, I'm going to repeat the question. So here's the condition. If this condition is there, if I dedicate myself fully to my preceptors, will it result that I'll become a pure devotee and what else? And help others. What do you think? I mean, in one sense, within your question are two questions. It is the nature of the instructions of the preceptor. Is that potency there to bring those things about? And then separate is Krishna standing behind? Is Krishna real? Because that idea, ultimately, is Krishna real? Because Krishna says those things. 434 Bhagavad Gita. So, is Krishna real? The answer is, of course, Krishna is real. Can I be sure that Krishna is real? Yes, you can be sure that Krishna is real. Can I experience that Krishna is real? Yes, you can experience that Krishna is real. Make a Krishna connection. What's that Krishna connection? Dandidi pranipat. Submission. Right? Pariprasnina. Sevaya. You ask some questions, you get some answers, you apply them. That's your service. It's part of your service. You do many things as service, and that's a really core part of your service. The things you ask questions about, you apply them. And what's going to happen? Krishna reciprocates. You experience the Krishna connection. Something more than you starts to happen. That's Krishna, his internal potency. And it's something that someone else need not verify for you. You can verify for yourself. It's scientific. Scientific adaptation, Prabhupada writes in that purport. There's an electric socket. If I stick my fingers in the electric socket, am I going to feel a shock? Well, you can find out. Or you can do some experiment, plug in an appliance, and see if the appliance turns or does the appliance thing. That means there's a little tester. There's electricity there. So you know that you'll experience a shock. You stick your fingers in the socket. You've seen others get a shock. Or you've seen other appliances spin. Will I experience that too? Is there really electricity there? I'm using a different example to explain or to respond to the nature of your question. Krishna is real. And submission to Krishna works. And the method of submission to Krishna is that method that Krishna indicates. That's Krishna's system. He places himself in the hands of his representatives and says to them, you distribute me as you like. That's Krishna. And those persons, the Madhyama Adhikari persons, it's their responsibility to make distinctions. Here's an innocent person, and here's an atheist person, and here's a devotee person. It's part of the injunction or the duty of the Madhyama Adhikari. And the Madhyama Adhikari is given the power of attorney. You can distribute me. and see, does it work? It's still not my experience. I'm just like, I'm deductively reasoning. Excuse me, inductively reasoning. I see it works. Will it work for me? Yes. Will I become a pure devotee? That's a strong statement. You'll become purified. And in the purified state, you'll be more in a position to give resource to others. And you'll have the disposition to give resource to others instead of being hoarding that resource, miser of that resource. It'll just happen naturally. And it's also part of the instructions of the preceptor. Don't hoard. Don't be a miser. Be a brahmana. Don't be a kripana. That which you have, you give to others.